Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 330. In this episode, we'll be continuing our journey through the fall of Numenor as we explore the geography of Numenor. Bear with me here. Before I get started, I'd like to give a double up air five to our amazing fellowship. Hands up, stick them up. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsht. Felt it coming through from each and every one of you. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., and Eru27. Also, a shout-out to those celebrating their fellowship anniversary in March of 2023, Jacob S., Peter B., Paul D., Stephen S., Jay-Z, Bethany E., Daniel D., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien. Thank you all so much for sticking with us over the last year. Join the Fellowship of the Road by visiting patreon.com/tolkienroad. When you join the fellowship, it helps us to keep on evering on, so head on over to patreon.com/tolkienroad to learn more. YouTube, hit that like button, don't forget to subscribe, and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. All right, so you may be thinking, what could possibly be more boring than writing about geography? But the thing about Tolkien as a writer is that no fact or detail is ever without significance and meaning. And that certainly applies to the geography of Numenor. Consider the last episode, in which we discussed the creation of Numenor. It was an island literally raised out of the sea by a god, and enriched by other gods. Everything in Numenor would seem to have a purpose, even if that purpose is not readily apparent. But one thing you will immediately notice, the land of Numenor has a very distinctive shape. Let's take a look at that here. So by the way, if you're listening to this, this one will be a very, we'll have a lot of visuals in this episode if you want to head on over to YouTube to check it out. Try to make it my best for those who are just listening though as well. So check out this map of Numenor here that's found in The Fall of Numenor. You'll notice it very much looks like the shape of a star. It's got five distinctive peninsulas jutting out from a central landmass. And it, you know, it really forms what we in our minds think of as that pentangle, right? Like that distinctive star shape. Of course, there's other shapes that are known as the star, but I say, at least in the culture that I grew up in, the culture that I'm a part of, the five promontory star shape is the most common one, the pentangle. So it takes on this symbolic star shape. And then recall that the peoples of Numenor were led to it over the sea by the star of Eärendil. The idea of a star seems to be highly important to Numenor. But I will say one important thing. Though the five promontories all end with the root star, right? Andu star, Foro star, Oro star, right? This is actually just the Quenyan word for land or part. So if you go back to the last episode, we talked a little bit about Quenya, what that language is. And it's essentially the High Elvish speech, okay? The High Elvish speech. And it's important to the history of Numenor. But understand that that's why these regions have these names. It's not because Tolkien's saying, hey, these are parts of the Starland. He's saying these are their names in Quenya, right? And that star just means land. And we're going to see how that plays out for each of those promontories. Okay. Well, let's dive into the text here. So the sources for this particular section, the geography of Numenor, are actually pretty straightforward. We've got Unfinished Tales, and we've got The Nature of Middle-earth. So those two things are where most of the text here is pulled from, most of the writings here are pulled from. The first two paragraphs of this chapter give us some good introductory material for this subject. Notice that Tolkien takes care to describe how we have this knowledge, right? How we have knowledge of Numenor and of its shape and what it was like in the first place. It's not enough for Tolkien simply to tell us what it's like, but he describes how this knowledge has come down to us. And it turns out that it's not particularly well preserved in terms of original documents, but is instead a few steps removed from original sources and descriptions. And that's really important. Like if you go back and look at Tolkien's sort of original writings between The Lost Road and his writings on in the Notion Club papers, where kind of this story of Numenor was first dreamed up, you'll see that it was always kind of this mysterious thing. It was always this thing that somebody was kind of had some sort of knowledge, some sort of amorphous knowledge of from distant past. Numenor is this land of a distant past. Okay, So it's not something where like Tolkien is saying like, this is exactly like we have it in scientific detail. He's simply saying like, these are the memories that have been handed down to us. And it's not always exactly clear how they came to us. But these are some of the sources that we think is how it came to us. And he's writing from the perspective of the end of the Third Age. Numenor ceased to be at the end of the Second Age. So there's like 3,000 years of history that have transpired. And this isn't our modern culture where we are able to document things so efficiently and kind of store them everywhere. This is in terms of even ancient cultures and how they would have to document things. You think about how little we know of just so many different ancient cultures, which once upon a time were, as far as we understand, these incredible cultures, right? The Babylonian Empire, even things that pre-existed that. We really don't know a ton about those places. We don't have a ton of information about what they were like, but we know that they were very impressive for their time. But all of this indicates an important sub-theme for Tolkien's Middle-earth writings. How do we come to know something? The question of epistemology, that's what that is. How do you know what you know, right? The question of epistemology is a crucial one for any scholar and really for any human being in dealing with matters of importance, okay? You know, it's a question that each of us should be asking ourselves on a day-to-day basis. You know, it's kind of a quality of that, of the examined life, like the well-examined life. You want to take a look at different aspects of your life and say, you know, how do I know this to be true, right? And how reliable is this information? You know, am I basing my life on things that are, you know, maybe not as reliable as I once thought they were, right? And those are important questions for us as human beings. But on a literary level, it also increases the sense of verisimilitude, this quality that pervades the writings of Middle-earth, this idea that Tolkien was writing about real things, even if they were, in fact, a fading memory. It's part of that enchantment that he's able to give, that he's able to impart to his writings, that these seem like real things. It seems like he's documenting actual cultures, actual events as he tells these stories. And for me, it's one of the most engrossing aspects of the way he writes and of the whole legendarium of Middle Earth. Okay, so let's take a look at the shape of Numenor. So Numenor, as we mentioned, is shaped like a star, right? It's got five promontories, five peninsulas that jut out in different directions from a central landmass. And that central landmass is called the Mittelmar, right? The Mittelmar. The Mittelmar is 250 miles across in all directions. So I wanted to just, as we talk about the size of Numenor, I wanted to kind of use a little Google Maps action here to give you all some visuals as far as how big some of these dimensions are. So for this central landmass, I was able to look at kind of, if you think of the middle of the island of Britain. Hold on, let me make sure clear my measurement there. All right, measure distance starting here. Oops, to here. No, that's not working. There we go. There we go. Okay. So, and it doesn't seem to be showing up particularly well, but you can see down here, it's supposed to show up here on the line. But if you look down here, if I measure kind of this middle portion of the island of, I suppose the island, what's the right term? Britannia, the island that includes England, Wales, and Scotland. If you go from really like the western tip of Wales, right? The farthest west tip of Wales, and you go up to the eastern coast of the island that is parallel with Manchester, that's about 250 miles. So you can kind of look at that, you know, that area, and that's the size in all directions of the region of Mittelmar, this central portion of Numenor. Now, we also learn about these five different promontories, what their names are. Basically, we have Forostar, and I'll come back to our map here. I'm going to go to our map of Numenor so we can look at these. All right, so we have Forostar, which is the northern promontory. We have Andustar, which is the western promontory. We have Hyrunustar, which is the southwestern promontory. Hyrostar, which is the southeastern promontory, and Orostar, which is the eastern promontory. Now, as I mentioned, the suffix star in Quenya, or the root star, if you will, means just place or land, right? So these different prefixes indicate the direction, right? So foro, right, would mean north. If you think of like the Forodwaith from the maps of you know, is it Beleriand or is it a third age map? I can't remember, but it indicates a northern, it indicates a northern region. Andustar, okay, what do we talk about? Andunie, right? Andunaic. This is the prefix that has to do with western things. So Andustar is the western land, okay? Hyarunstar, Hyarnustar, I'll get it right eventually, would be the south. So we think of Hy, right? That's the south prefix. If we Hyarostar and Hyarnustar, Hyarnustar indicates the southwestern. Hyarostar indicates the southeastern. And then we look at Orostar, which is the or, which indicates the east, all right? So Orostar, Hyarostar, Hyarnustar, Andustar, and Forostar, okay? So these are our five promontories. We have north, west, southwest, southeast, and east, okay? So those are the different regions, the different promontories in addition to the Metalmar. Now, let's go back to our map, Google Maps. I want to talk about the actual size of the island when you take into account these promontories. Okay, so we said the center region, the central region, is about 250 miles in either direction. Roughly, the text says these different peninsulas are about 200 miles in length each. Okay, 200 miles in length and then 100 miles across, just generally speaking. That's kind of the general size of these things, right? Not exact dimensions, but general size. So what does that mean? Well, if you went from the the tip of Andustar here, right, the westernmost tip of Andustar, all the way to the southwestern southeastern tip of Hyarostar, okay, how far would that be? Well, add on 200 miles for each one of those peninsulas, right? So that's 400 miles, and then you add the 250 miles of the width of the Mittelmeer, right? Of the diameter of the Mittelmeer, okay? So that gives you a number of roughly 650 miles, all right? 650 miles. So what kind of size are we talking about there? So it's actually, I'll use two things to indicate this. So if we look at France, modern France, the dimensions of modern France using its current borders. Oh, clear measurement. Here we go. Measure distance. All right. Oh, it's not working how I want it to. Measure distance. There we go. All right. If you look at that from the northwestern tip of France to the southwestern end or southeastern end of France, it's about 623 miles, okay? So that's getting pretty close to the dimension, the kinds of dimensions we're talking about here. So you can roughly think in your mind, and even in my mind, when I look at modern France, like the shape of Numenor kind of resembles modern France to me. So you can get in your mind that Numenor is roughly the size of France, of modern France. If we can do a comparison for those of us stateside, and because you know, in my case, I've never actually been to France, but I have driven through Texas. And if you do a similar calculation here with Texas, you begin on the over near El Paso, and yeah, it just doesn't want to work the same. Okay, here we go. I think it has something to do with my video recording software. It doesn't want to cooperate entirely, but if you look, if you go from roughly El Paso, which is a far western tip of Texas, and you go all the way to just south of Houston on the Gulf Coast, that's a little over 650 miles, 680 miles. So roughly the same distance there. And if, you know, for me, having driven driven across Texas, not that way, but from El Paso through Dallas up into Arkansas before, just in fact last year, I know how long a drive that was, and it was just kind of impressive to see all this vast, wide open land there. So you know, you think about it, and you know, France, of course, has a much longer history in terms of its current civilization. So it's really built up, you know, quite a bit. So I don't imagine that you've got as much open space as you would drive from that one distance to the other there. But with Texas, you know, you drive through a large portion of that between El Paso and Dallas, and a lot of it's just going to be open, like nothing is there. So it's a really good indication, I think, of what Numenor, how vast it must have seemed to these ancient peoples when they arrived there in the first place. So, I am a little bit of a geography nerd. Thank you very much. I like to play around on Google Maps. There you go. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. So from one end to the other, roughly 650 miles. That's the size of Numenor. Now, one other note on the shape of Numenor. There is a small region in the Mittalmar, the central portion, known as Arandor. And that is the, if you will, kind of the, it's called, the, that means the Kinglands. And it's, if you will, the District of Columbia of Numenor. It's this small region right here, okay? It includes Romana. It includes Armenelos, which are the two kind of most important cities in Numenor. And then it includes the Middle Tarma, which is this mountain, the 3,000-foot-high mountain that rises above the rest of Numenor, okay, or at least the regions around it. So, in the Middlemar, there were few trees. It was mainly grasslands and lowdowns. And the chief feature of the Middlemar was the great mountain, the Middle Tarma. Middle Tarma literally means the Pillar of Heavens. It rose 3,000 feet above the land around it, and in keeping with the star shape of the island, the Middle Tarma was located almost exactly in the middle of the island, and its five routes extended out in the directions of the five promontories, okay? So even the base of this central mountain, right, which would have kind of loomed over probably most of the rest of the island, right? Even that, if you looked at it top down, had a star shape to it. Okay, so interesting to note there as well, the star theme comes back in. It really does seem like Numenor is kind of like this land of the star, right? Okay, and what is that all about? Well, the Middle Tarma, we'll have much more to say about that in later episodes. It was a very important place, even a holy place to the people of Numenor. The northern region is the Forustar, all right, so the Northlands. Really, the most important thing about the Forustar, at least off the bat, is that it seems to have been a home to a lot of eagles, okay? It wasn't the most hospitable, friendly place. It wasn't particularly friendly to either the Numenoreans or to any kind of agricultural or even just wild vegetation. It was not really a home to any of those things. It was kind of a rocky, craggy place, but it was a home to eagles. That's one thing that we know. With Andustar, the western promontory, these are the westlands. The most important thing probably to note here is, a couple of things. So we have another port city on this other side, Andunie, right? And this will be an important location later in the history of Numenor. But we also have this port here kind of midway between Andustar and Hyrunustar. It's kind of like on the borderlands of these two. And what is this? Well, it's Eldalande, okay? So this is literally means the haven of the Eldar, and this is where the Eldar coming from Tol Eressëa, the elves coming from Tol Eressëa would visit Numenor, right, throughout its history. So this is important to note, and something, again, that will come up again later. The elves of Eressëa would visit Numenor from time to time, and you could look on clear days from different portions of Numenor, and you could see a light in the west. And they thought it was the light of the Blessed Realm. It was actually the light of this island, Eressëa. And what Eressëa is, you would learn a lot more about it if you've read the Silmarillion. But Eressëa is essentially this large island that was used by the sea god Olmo to transport the elves from Beleriand over to the Blessed Realm before the First Age, okay? So some of these elves made this journey initially and became part of the peoples of the Blessed Realm. And this island of Eressëa, this large island, was used as kind of this ship, right, to transport these peoples. And eventually it was moored there at the edge of the Blessed Realm. So it's kind of the first place you come to if you're sailing west towards the Blessed Realm would be the island of Eressëa. So that's what they're talking about here. There were still elves that lived there in the time of the Second Age. A lot of the elves lived even further into the Blessed Realm, but some of them still lived in Eressëa. And these elves and the Numenoreans got to know each other over time, okay? So you think, like we talked last episode about how Eowyn shared a lot of knowledge with the Numenoreans, with the Edain, the Dunedain, before they came to Numenor. I would assume that the elves of Eressëa continued to enrich the peoples of Numenor with knowledge, with gifts, with things like that over time. And we'll actually learn a little bit more about that later on as well. Next, we have, if we're kind of going counterclockwise here, we have the Hiranustar and the Hiarostar, right? These are the southwest and the southeast promontories, okay? The southwest lands and the southeast lands. So this region was safe from the harshest weather and climates of Numenor. You kind of think of like the movement of the winds, maybe going from west to east or east to west. Well, because of where it was situated, this land down south was maybe the most hospitable, just kind of a fairer region, if you will. And over time, it became really cultivated, right? Became a kind of a fertile agricultural region due to some of the work the Numenoreans put into it and developing it. And it was also beach country. You read about the beaches that are described here, and it actually sounds like, you know, as opposed to some of the other places where there was kind of rockier and maybe harder to get to the beaches, this seems to be more of what most of us would probably have in mind for a nice beach vacation. And then finally, the Orostar, right? The eastern promontory. The Eastlands. So what we know here is that much grain was grown here, especially in the regions adjacent to the King's Land. All right. So So we've looked at this map of Numenor, very interesting map that we have available to us here. And let's consider a couple of the other pencil sketches in this. We have this sketch of the what I would assume is the Minotaurma. Now, I was thinking to myself, what perspective is this drawn from? What are we looking at? And my best guess is that we're either looking at the Minotaurma from the south or from the west. And I think the best guess is on the south, because we know from this map of Numenor that there was a large river that flowed south from the Minotaurma and into this region here. And this is a very important river. And we also know that right next on the southeast, to the southeast of the Minotaurma was Armenelos, the capital city. And if you look very faintly here at the image, this pencil sketch, you'll see that there appears to be a city right here, right? There appears to be some kind of buildings, something going on right there. So my guess is we're looking at it from the south. Now, it's possible that it could also be a depiction from the west. Although if it was a depiction from the west, I might expect to see something of the Eldolande here, right? The haven of the elves. Although that could be kind of out of the picture at that point. It's also possible this is later in history when there may have been more settlement here and in this region, which we didn't really discuss, but we know there is a little more settlement in this region, and that perspective would match there as well. But my money is on the idea that it is looking at it from the south. So, and then the other image involved here is this interesting image of kind of a rocky precipice with a waterfall. Now, with this, my best guess is that this is supposed to describe the last this last section of the Orostar, where it talks about it ended in a sheer fall to oceanic depths. That looks like a sheer fall to oceanic depths right there. So I think that may be what's being depicted. Of course, it could be something having to do with the Forostar, because we do see eagles here. But it's either the Forod Star or it's the Aura Star is my best guess that's being depicted here. Coastlands there. All right. Well, for most of us, geography is never the most fascinating topic, but it nevertheless plays an important role in shaping and influencing the development of any culture. And Tolkien seems to have wanted us to understand this about Numenor. And given that Numenor was a land specifically formed for a specific people by the gods of Arda, we would do well to realize that at least when it comes to Middle Earth, even the finest details may have a greater significance than we immediately realize. All right. So let's jump into some correspondence, shall we? The note for this week comes from Ben Mason 1166, a YouTube comment, episode 313. And this is a response to, and I believe this was an episode where I shared some thoughts on how I would have done the Rings of Power. If, you know, season one, having reflected back on it, having seen the whole thing, how I would have approached it. And Ben Mason 1166 comments, kind of in agreement with some of my criticism, says, "Definitely agree with all your points. I think the biggest sin of the show is how lame Numenor feels. They should have put most of their time into building that civilization, showcasing the extraordinary men, technology, and cities, and creating cool storylines within Numenor. Beyond insulting to Tolkien's vision that they basically just ripped a coast city out of Game of Thrones, except with less interesting characters and pointless storylines. Really cheapens the feeling of great loss and sorrow when Numenor is less advanced and has less impressive men than Gondor in the Third Age." Yeah, I mean, I would really agree with you there, Ben. I was extremely underwhelmed by how they depicted Numenor. It just did not seem particularly deep, real, impressive to me at all. Its people didn't seem that impressive. The city, what we saw of it, didn't seem that impressive. You know, it took Galadriel like 30 minutes to ride from one end of the island to the other. When we're talking, we now realize it's like, you know, it should have been like 450 miles, right? If you're thinking like Rome, she rides from Romana to the what's the city called? It's the one in the west. I mentioned it just a minute ago. She rides from Romana. Of course, the cities are never named, but she rides from Romana to Andunye, and that would have been about 450 miles. But yet, ain't no thing for Galadriel. She just does it and has a good time doing it. Really, kind of weird good time based on the look on her face. Anyway, it was very disappointing, and you know, hopefully through the course of doing this series and elaborating on some of the stuff that's in this, you know, really great book that was compiled by Brian Sibley based on Tolkien's writings, in the course of going through this, we're really going to unpack a lot of it and understand just how incredibly glorious this place was, and also the civilization that came to be built up within it. Okay. So anyway, Ben, thank you for your correspondence. Hope you're still listening, and look forward to hearing from you again. All right. And I would encourage everybody, please drop us a line wherever you can find us, and we will get back to you, do our best to respond to you somehow and at some point. All right. Well, please, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or the podcasting platform of your choice. And if you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by doing so. Helps us to keep on evering on when we get those 5-star reviews. All right. Well, that's it for this episode, folks. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Aru27, Emilio P., Jonathan D., Mike M., Robert H., Paul D., Julia, Wordy, Joe Bagelman, Jacob S., Richard K., Matt R., Matthew W., Garrett P., Chris K., John W., Eugene D., Chris B., Daniel S., Seb M., Shana Supreme, and Corey C., Ms. Anonymous, Andrew T., Red Hawk, Shannon S., Brian O., Zeke F., James L., Chris L., Chuck F., Aja V., Ish of the Hammer, Teresa C., David of Pints with Jack, Eric B., and Johanna T. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening. We will talk at you next time. Bye-bye.